this week on The Inside Flap.
I get so petty. Like, if someone annoys me in the game,
right? Yeah.
I will choose like to play a healer, and then but then I will go around killing people as a healer, and then I was like, ha ha, you just got killed by your healer.
Oh, that is me.
She was like, yeah, he told me that they have microphones and they are listening to us. So we're all sitting like literally right underneath this camera talking crap about the administration and our meeting. So I immediately launched into this just this glowing endorsement.
Oh, my.
To Rita.
Okay.
And the admin.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Episode 264. Seated across the snack shack, to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And resting comfortably on the floral settee, that's Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Welcome to the Inside Flap Podcast. As I think I already said it, I'll say it again. Episode 264. Tell a friend. Got a great show for you this week. Of course, we have our
book reviews,
book recommendations, and the
audiobook of the week.
Audiobook of the week. And we're joined this week by a great guest. How much fun was Jesse Q. Sutanto
talk
to? She was a lot
of fun.
She's
really different. I like
she,
that.
She is.
I mean, in a good way.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I can't wait for you all to hear.
Yeah.
In fact, I was still talking about her writing process
after we finished the interview.
Huh. Where do you guys hear about her writing process? Interesting, to say the least.
I'm jealous, to say the least.
She is USA Today bestselling author of Dial A for Aunties. She's got a new book out now. I absolutely love this book. It's called You Will Never Be Me. And we'll have more about that for you in just a second. But first, been a busy week for this guy.
Is he really that busy?
Yes, Robert Justice. I know you're talking about Andrew, but I am really that busy. It's back to work. You know, you get a whole summer off. I mean, if you can call taking care of a puppy for half the summer, having a summer off.
Mm-hmm.
But last week was what I like to call it, it's the soft opening of the school year. There shouldn't be any kids, but Deb, theater teacher Deb, just loves to have the theater council come in and just loves to put those kids to work, which means when you put the kids,
right?
She says, Dave, give these kids something to do.
Oh.
So then I got to run around and find spaces that need to be cleaned up. And there's always in the theater department,
there's
always
stuff to be done.
But it takes into my So today is, as we record this, today is Monday. We worked all last week with just teachers. I still have not unpacked my stuff from last year.
Wow.
Now, I don't have a lot of stuff to unpack,
huh.
But I still have not unpacked all my stuff from last year. I've unpacked like 10% of it. Hmm. But anyway, here's what, Andrew, you will have to look forward to, because you missed, I know you just started working, but you missed all the week before the kids come.
The planning and stuff.
The planning stuff. Yeah. And what the what I like to call the admin, it's when they think they're smarter than the teachers, and so they like to organize little activities that's going to show us, metaphorically, what it's like to be a teacher. I'll never forget the time when we had our theater teacher training. And all the theater teachers, we gathered around like a kiddie pool, a toddler, inside of music grade. This was at West High School.
I have a memory of you talking about
yes.
this.
We gathered around this plastic toddler swimming pool. All the like 25 to 30 theater teachers in the district. We were all given a handful of Legos. Then we were told to close our eyes. And then we were all told to throw our Legos one at a time, not one person at a time, but all of us at a time, but one Lego at a time into the plastic swimming pool. And we were to do it blindfolded or with our eyes closed to hear the sound of the Legos hitting the plastic. and each Lego hitting the plastic represented, I don't even remember, but it was like supposed to represent an obstacle or a challenge that we had to to face. This year, this is what they did for us at East last week, is we got into groups based on the color. So we had all these unblown up balloons, or I guess just regular balloons at our tables, but not inflated. We had to choose a balloon, blow it up, and then to write one word that to us represented teamwork. What our meaning, our definition of teamwork is. When we have markers there, I wrote bling. That did not go over very well with my group, but given short notice, I thought
that's
that
what
was,
you thought you were going to write
bling. Yes, bling. That's what I wrote on my balloon. And then, you know, everybody's writing fun, dedication, devotion, students first, all the usual BS. So then we had a take. Then we went into the gym, and they took, based on what color balloon we chose, and I chose orange for the Orioles.
Okay.
And we took all the balloons, we put them in a big trash bag, and then we tied the trash bag up, and now we have like groups of 20.
Just stomp on them?
In a circle. No. Oh. What we had to do, we had the opposite. You had to, so we have this, you know, trash bag full of 20 balloons, throw it up in the air, and then as a group, keep hitting it to keep it from hitting the ground. But once you hit it, you couldn't hit it again until everybody in your group hit it.
That's kind of fun because it's active.
Yeah, that's good. We're moving around. We're getting it done. And then they say, great. Now, talk about what you did there, but we're going to need your bag of balloons. So they go, all the admin grabs our bag of balloons, and they leave the gym. And then we have to discuss whatever, what it took for us to work together as a team,
to play that game.
Then they come back. Then they're like, all right, the group leader for each group is going to receive your bag back. So they come up, and because I'm loud and I got in charge of my group, they come up to me for my group, and he gives me the bag. And immediately I notice that it's heavier and what they have done. And they said, okay, now do the same exact thing, go. So I had to throw it up in the air. But this time, they threw a water balloon into the bag. Making it more harder. Challenging and harder. So again, what does this do? What does this mean for you as a teacher? What is just a long way to go to get having us to talk about the challenges that we're going to face for this year?
That's a real long way.
Yeah, a real long way.
I hate balloons. They're terrible for the environment too. I don't like the smell they have. I have trouble tying them.
Yeah.
I don't like it when they pop. I find it stressful.
Oh, yeah. And immediately when we blew them up, somebody had to pop
I find
it.
That very stressful. So I'll underinflate.
Mm-hmm. Someone else, balloon. Of course, had to do that thing where they squeeze the thing to make it noise, to make the noise come out when they deflate
that's
it.
That's always fun.
Yeah. But that's what it's like being a teacher. So we're all gathered after we leave the gym. We're all gathered in the hallway, and I come over and I see the dance teacher there, and she starts telling me about, I don't know. She starts telling me about these woo-woo podcasts. You guys have any idea what a woo-woo podcast is?
No.
Absolutely no clue. Yeah.
So I guess basically, and she's telling me about these podcasts where they're just about like strange and unexplained phenomena.
I know those. I listen to a few of those.
You know, like every I guess once one of them is done by a medium. I don't know. She was calling them woo-woo podcasts. So a couple other teachers gather around in the hallway, and we're standing there, and, you know, just talking about the meeting and how weird it was with the balloons and how strange it was. And I look up. I notice in the ceiling there's a camera that I had never noticed before. And of course, we have cameras all throughout the building to monitor and track students. And I was like, have you guys ever seen that camera up there before? And this other teacher goes, oh, yeah, Dean Anderson told me about these cameras that were coming up. And shout out to Dean Anderson, no longer at our school, sadly. He left us to go to a different school. But she was like, yeah, he told me that they have microphones and they are listening to us. So we're all sitting like literally right underneath this camera talking crap about the administration and our meeting. So I immediately launched into this just this glowing endorsement.
Rita.
Okay. So Sylvia works at or worked actually, since she's in college now.
Yes.
But she worked at an elementary school here in Littleton, mm-hmm. and they have cameras everywhere. They tell the kids that there's sound.
Right.
There is no sound.
Yeah, and I don't see how there could possibly be sound. But there might be.
It would not surprise me, though, if they just tell the teachers that there's sound.
But Dean Anderson is not going to, I don't think he's not going to lie about that.
Yeah.
I think there are. I mean, look at these ring doorbell cams. They're not that expensive, and they've got sound to them.
They always do. They tell the little kids, like, we're going to watch the tape back. Is that what we're going to hear?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, no, you're not going to, you're going to hear this. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I remember, and speaking of Dean Anderson, when my very first year at East, somebody stole, or what he thought, he was told by our lighting person that these brand new lights disappeared, these portable lights disappeared.
Wow.
And so Dean Anderson spent, he told me he spent 2 hours scanning and reviewing the tape
outside
of the auditorium. And there's several doors. So he's scanning and reviewing all these doors.
Wow.
And he just happens to be mentioning to him. And I'm like, oh, the lights? I'm like, yeah, I borrowed those. It was when I was interviewed for Nine News. And I took them home. And the kid, instead of saying anything to the class, he just went and reported them stolen. Meanwhile, I had them here, right here in the snack shack where I was when I was interviewed by
Channel
9. So
Dean Anderson would have seen Teacher Medicus taking them out.
But he never even saw me. Or if he saw me,
he just
glossed right past me.
I probably wouldn't have
either. But he was mad. He was like, I spent hours looking at that thing. Hours.
And interesting.
It was like a whole month before he let me forget that.
That's really funny.
I blame the kid. The kid should have said something. Anyway, it's good to be back. Tomorrow we have all the kids, and I will 100% lose my voice. I'm already... Yeah. We just had freshmen today for 15 minutes. And of course, I did my usual shtick where I, hello, welcome to class. Come on in. Okay. Have a seat. Yes, and we had all our theater students from last year introduce themselves to the kids. But tomorrow, I'll go in, start out with this voice, and then slowly break into my real voice just so I can watch their reactions, which is always a lot of fun.
You just have one freshman class, though, right?
Two.
Oh, you have two.
Two level ones, two level twos, and one stagecraft, where we have 10th grade through 12th grade.
Okay. Yep.
But, it's different. Last year, I had three level ones, so
I am
very excited to be one
Dropping
have
some
one
freshmen.
Less freshman level class.
Do you have any freshman classes, Andrew?
Oh, yeah. Ugh. I think like five out of the four classes are freshmen.
They're tough.
Yeah.
That's hard.
You mean five out of the six?
Five out of the six.
I was telling Andrew,
that's funny.
They are in violation of this teacher union because they're all teaching six classes over there.
Oh.
Yeah.
But that's so, Douglas County.
Right, so there's a reason.
It's Elizabeth.
Is that not in Douglas County?
I don't think it's Douglas County. Is it Kiowa County?
Oh, Kiowa.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, but wherever you go, I mean, you shouldn't be teaching six classes.
A lot. That is a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, you know, what do I know?
All right, and when
no,
I say
Andrew wouldn't know.
Teaching, Andrew is, well, we'll get to Andrew in a little bit, but what he tells me is I got a text, any way to not fall asleep in the afternoons, because he's just standing around listening to the other woman lecture is all he's doing. Yeah.
Yeah, and I can. And so basically, you know, I'm a student teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I would say is it's a great school for me to student teach at, right? I think it's a great opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it, you know, it's tough. I've got to listen to the same lecture.
Oh.
Like four times.
See, that's brutal.
Back to back.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
That's tough.
You know, and the thing is, I guess it's going to be the rest of the year for me.
Yep.
And you know what I mean? The whole school year is going to be that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, Laura, how has your week been?
Well, it is Monday and we dropped. We moved our daughter into CU Boulder yesterday, into a dorm. And yesterday...
Rite of passage.
It was the surface of the sun.
Oh, it was so brutally hot up in Boulder.
It was so...
Yeah.
So the campus itself, if you have never been to Boulder, I would recommend Googling it. It is stunning. It is absolutely
gorgeous.
Beautiful. the beauty, like every once in a while I could pause and say, wow, I'm getting my money's worth.
That's true.
There's but then I was so beaten down by the heat that at a certain point I could, it was survival. It was like, I got to get from one shade tree to the next shade tree.
Yep.
So we had some, so she's in marching band for CU and we got to move in early. She got to move in early, which is great. So right. There weren't very many kids moving in, which might've been part of the problem.
This is the best part of marching band.
Yes, it is. We got a great parking spot. Early. We stayed in the parking spot for the 3 or 4 hours we were there.
Yep.
It's fantastic. The kids who were there, like negative on the helpful rank is what I would say. Negative.
They were a detriment.
A detriment.
Yeah.
It was very confusing.
Not helpful whatsoever.
It was very confusing.
They loved to sit around and talk to each other.
Yeah. They were soft speakers too. Mm-hmm. And Sylvia had trouble hearing them and didn't understand what they were saying.
Yep.
It was not helpful.
And these are supposed to be like the kids that are up there.
They're
literally there to help out.
Yeah.
These are supposed to be your leaders.
I was really underwhelmed with that.
Yeah. A little disappointed.
We struggled. We went around this building in the 99 degree blazing sun, what felt like 3 or 4 times.
Wait, and you guys were had 4 suitcases. I had a huge bin that they gave us bins. So we loaded up a bunch of stuff in this bin.
The suitcases
were
heavy.
We went back and forth. At one point, I was like, well, we're going to have to pull this bin over these 2 steps to get up to the back door because her room is near the back.
Okay.
And then there's a...
Yes. So here's the thing about where her dorm is. It's in an area. It's beautiful. It's fairly new. Everything's like new and pretty and beautiful.
Lots of trees. There's even a little lake there. Fountain. Really nice.
A person who hates people designed the labyrinthine dorm.
Oh, the dorm is ridiculous.
So you go in. I took a video. We were going to go up, walk up to see your room for the first time. I started a video. We're going to walk up the stairs. Walk up 3 flights of stairs. The door's locked. Can't get in. There's no way to get in.
Can't get in the third
walk
floor.
Walk back down. Try to find an elevator. The elevator's locked.
It's a key.
Couldn't find anything.
They're key operated. Every elevator we saw, you had to have a key.
Trying to find other staircases that would at least go up to this floor that she's on.
Right.
Or a person who could tell us. There's not a soul to be found.
Nope.
Dead quiet. There are multiple entrance and exits of this building.
Different wings, east wing, west wing, north wing, south wing.
Dave and I, at one point, we left Sylvia in the room to unpack. He and I went out to take stuff to the garbage. It took us like 10-15 minutes to try to find a room again.
There's every floor has like loops in it.
Loops.
We kept returning to where we came from.
Yeah.
Stairways that went to nowhere.
Stairs.
We're
that
not
didn't...
even making this up. Like,
no.
It is ridiculous.
It was bad.
So what you're saying is it doubles at night as a casino.
Yes. You're very untrue.
It might
it
as well.
It does. Yeah.
No sense of time.
Because when you are in
place.
The halls, the residence halls, you're walking around the dorm rooms, there's no windows because the rooms have the windows.
Right.
It's an odd spot. And then I asked Sylvia, I said, did you have trouble finding your room again? Like I asked her that last night.
Okay,
and she goes, oh,
Yeah. It's going to take a long time for her to get acclimated to that building.
I did not
understand
it.
Like
as an interior designer, like sometimes for wayfinding is really important for designers.
Yeah. And you're usually really good at it.
Well, I couldn't understand where it is. But what I'm saying is like as an interior designer, we wayfind, we color code, like it's the second floor, it's going to be blue. This first, you know, you color code things to help people wayfind.
Oh, gotcha.
There was none of that. It was all the same color, the same tile was used.
Yep.
Nothing.
So I work for a startup, right? And they built this brand new building for this startup, right? Now, they only had bathrooms like every other floor or like every third floor in the building.
Mm.
Oh.
And now the CEO of the company, and I think basically claimed that it was so people could have a social experience in the bathrooms.
What?
Right? Yeah. And I can't tell you how many times that I had to use the bathroom, and I would go to like 2 or 3 different bathrooms looking for an open stall, and I couldn't find one, but it really came down to...
Wow.
Yeah, they were too cheap to build a bathroom on every floor.
Oh.
Right? And so he basically said it was a social...
I feel like there are
how many times
requirements
you,
for that.
You ever socialized?
That is so interesting.
I never would have socialized in the bathroom.
No,
yeah,
of
course
also,
not.
I feel like if I'm the owner of a company, I don't want my employees socializing in the bathroom.
No,
I
want
them out there working.
Being productive.
Where I can see them.
So, So who knows?
Yeah.
Like what the thinking is, what the bizarre logic was.
It was brutal. It was very strange.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. But anyway, we get up to her room. In her room, she is lucky. She is in an air-conditioned dorm. Her room has a little thermostat there on the wall mm-hmm. that is climate controlled.
Yep.
And I said, so would you turn the AC on? So she does.
Right.
We work for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I said, wow, did you turn it on? She goes, oh, yeah. I was like, well, what does it say that? I walk over. It says that it's, what,
88.6 degrees and I was in like, the room.
I was like, I don't think you set this. And then we realize her AC isn't working.
AC is broken.
By the time we left there, it was over 90 degrees inside the room.
Now, was it not working or they just hadn't turned it on yet?
Was not working.
Was not working. It wasn't working in a lot of the rooms.
We had to put in an order. We put in an order. Her mini fridge was also not working. We had bought her yogurts to get her through band camp this first week.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm sure she's had to throw those out. Another work order. But we also had, Dave, while you were out, Dave did a Jimmy John's run.
That's right.
For us. Yes. While you were out, we had two parents and a kid come through to see Sylvie's room and say hi.
Uh-huh.
And the dad was the most unhelpful person. He's like, wow, it's really hot in here. And I was like, yeah, her AC's broken.
Right.
Wow. I was like, we reported it. Yeah. Like I've moved on in my head. Like it'll get fixed. No big deal.
We put in the work order.
Sylvie doesn't like to be cold. So it's not honestly for of all the kids to have a warm room.
And out here in Colorado, it gets cool at night.
Not a big deal.
She's got windows that'll open.
And then he couldn't let it go. And he kept telling me, oh, I thought our room was warm. This room's like 10 degrees warmer than our room. And I was like, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He's like, no, really? It's like 10 degrees warmer. I'm like, well,
okay.
It's probably 90 degrees in here. And I said, we did put a work order through, but he wouldn't let it go.
Huh.
Mm. Yeah. And I was like, oh, we know it's hot, bud.
Yeah.
We know. Right. We know. Mm. So it was just miserably hot. But we ended up getting it done and moved her in and it looks great. The room's really pretty. I was really worried. So CU has an influx of students. I think they're going to probably have their biggest freshman class they've ever had this year.
Not you think. They are.
They will. Yeah, they will.
They definitely will.
We're guessing around 9,000 freshmen is our guess.
Wow. Right.
And that is the Coach Prime effect.
Wow, 9,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm on, I think I've mentioned this in the show, yes, I'm on Coach two different.
What's up, boss? You believe that?
There he is.
You Hold on. Oh, no. Do you believe that?
There you go. That's Coach Prime. So we got our Coach Prime music, today. She sent me a picture
his
for the trombone.
Music.
It's walk-on music.
And it's full trombone. It's the best sound I've ever heard. It sounds so great.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so the dad.
Oh, the
helper.
Yeah, so there's so many students that I've been reading on the Facebook parent page that see you. Has been converting single rooms into double rooms.
Oh, man.
Can you
imagine?
And
parents online are literally posting the dimensions, the length and the width.
Oh, really?
And asking everyone else on this saying, are there any architects? Can anyone help me space plan this? Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe you can make a little extra money by space planning.
Well, I mean, there's not that much to be done. Also,
you can do.
It's just two beds and a dresser. Like, right. There's not a lot of space planning that can be done. But I was prepared.
You're not a miracle worker.
I was prepared in advance for us to face a similar situation. Mm-hmm. And I told the RA, we met the RA, and she goes, she's like, yeah, I've heard that's happening all over. She said, fortunately, we don't have any of that here at Arnett. Yeah.
Yep. Andrew, we FaceTimed you. You saw Sylvia's room.
The
she
room
got
is
a
big
really
for a
nice
dorm
room.
No, really nice sized room for sure.
Vaulted ceilings. Yep. Yeah. Very, very nice sized room.
Yeah. So we left and she's doing great. She's loving band camp.
Yep.
And hopefully, fingers crossed, things go well.
She's on. I'm sure next week when classes start,
that'll be a letdown.
The party will be over.
Yeah.
Not that band camp is a party. I mean, she's out there getting
it
done,
but at least
she's in doing something that she loves to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Andrew, how have you been?
Dashiell marched in his first big parade.
Yes, we got to see him.
Yep. And Dave sent
it
me a photo.
It was hot as heck for Dashiell.
Oh, yeah.
It was brutal.
Yeah.
So Dave sent me a photo, and in the photo is Dashiell giving side eye.
Yeah. Because I'm yelling, Dashiell!
I was yelling his
Dashiell!
Name, too.
Classic.
Yeah, Dave and I both lost our minds and started yelling at him.
Now, just after you took a picture, a veteran marching in the parade did a literal face plant.
Right. Yeah.
And so here it is getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And everybody, the parade has to stop for 30, 40 minutes.
Wow.
While they basically get this guy medical treatment.
Yep.
You know, as far as that goes. So these guys are all in their uniforms. And actually, very few of the marching bands had their full uniforms on.
No, you weren't there. There was only one marching band that I saw. Because I ran.
Littleton
I went for
was
a run.
Full,
I went up and
yeah,
down.
Littleton, full dress.
That's what I mean. Littleton was.
Littleton.
And Heritage.
Heritage was.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The only band I saw that was not was Cherry Creek.
Well, the thing
Creek.
Is, you get...
Cherry Creek and Arapahoe.
You get... Was Arapahoe there?
Yeah, they're not a band, but just not marching band, but they're band.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
It's because they don't actually have a marching band anymore.
No, yeah. The kids were all in their full dress gear.
So you here they are just waiting.
Our high schools get judged at that. Mm. I think they get judged.
Mm. Yeah. All right, I'll tell you what else is nice. That is Jesse Q. Sutanto's new book, You Will Never Be Me, a fun mystery thriller set in the world of the social media influencer. In particular, in this book, we have dueling momfluencers. Now, I didn't even know this was such a thing. And that is a real word. I learned a ton about social media influencers reading this book. A real eye-opener. Now, one of the momfluencers in this book is a woman named Meredith. Now, Meredith tutored and nurtured a young mother and momfluencer wannabe named Aspen, way back when Aspen's followers were only in the hundreds. Can you imagine? Only 100 followers. Well, flash forward a few months and Aspen has surpassed Meredith in success. And after a big fight, has left Meredith in the dust and alone. Meredith, not one to leave a situation like this lying down, starts following Aspen around. And one day breaks into Aspen's house and actually steals an iPad belonging to one of Aspen's kids. So now she has access to all of Aspen's info, including appointments and videos that might not have been good enough to make it to Aspen's Instagram page and might even be embarrassing. Whatever will Meredith do with this? A really fun read. I laughed out loud often during it. And before you can say Snapchat, things actually turn murderous. Mm-hmm. That's right. Love this book. Love talking to Jesse. She's really funny. I think you'll... really enjoyed this conversation. So here now, talking about her book, You Will Never Be Me. This is a Jesse Q. Sutanto.
I love having nighttime interviews because, you know, the kids are in bed. I know they're not gonna rush in and climb on my lap and demand to be in the interview as well.
That is true.
Well, thanks for hopping on. Listen,
yeah, thank you,
Jesse. We absolutely loved your new book. So good. Oh my goodness, You Will Never Be Me. So funny. Now, this is a tale of hands-free purses, fake cocaine, and low-carb carbs. Jesse, what was it that inspired you to write this book?
So, two things. Ever since I became a mom, social media keeps pushing momfluencers on me, right? Like, each time, you know, I'm scrolling through Instagram, it's just like, mommy content, right? And so I'm like just so amazed by these women because I don't know how they make their lives look so aesthetic because, you know, my life is a mess.
I think most of us are. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I've always been like interested in that. And then I read this article about a husband and he's like, I'm leaving my wife because of aesthetic. And I was like, oh, that's cold. But then I read it and it was like crazy. Like he was talking about how everything in his life has to be about aesthetics. You know, like his kids can only have, you know, those like Nordic wooden toys. And,
yes,
and no color, you know, because it has to all be like,
yes.
Like,
tasteful.
Pastel. Yeah. Or nude colors, you know. And like he left a glass on the table and his wife got angry because like it ruined the video that she was shooting, you know. So then after I read the article, I was like, oh my God, I get it now, you know. And so I was like, okay, I need to write about this. I can't not write about this.
No.
Man, that's crazy how much that what is in the book is actually real. And I was wondering, you know, how real it was. One of the things that I was stunned when you talk about social media in the book, you're talking about these morning. Now, I never heard of these morning routine.
I hadn't either.
Oh my gosh!
Video.
No. What?
No. I've never heard of it. But then quickly, so I was like, let me take a look at this. I did a 2-second Google search, and then like the rest of my day was ruined because all I could do was keep. I couldn't stop. I was just rage watching all these videos of these women waking up, you know, quote unquote, waking up with the perfect makeup and anything. And I'm just curious. Like how do you stop watching? I know you had to watch some of these for research for your book, but how do you stop? How do you stop watching them?
Yeah.
How do you not get so angry?
I don't.
I see. It's terrible.
Did you? Yeah.
Was that your research?
And you just know, like, you know, they wake up with like perfect hair and, you know, perfect everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't stop watching because I'm just like, oh my God, this is amazing content for my book.
That's true.
They're givers. They're real givers. Whether they know it, they do just keep giving.
Yeah, they really do. Your book opens with a bang, though. You have a great opening sentence for chapter one. Quote, "I'm stalking my best friend," which... You know, I was hooked immediately by that sentence. And I'm also reading another one of your books that came out last year. It's called I'm Not Done With You Yet.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Also opened that book with a tremendous sentence about, you know, when you know you're normal or something like that. I'm paraphrasing you terribly, so I apologize. But I was, do you work on getting like your opening sentence? Is that like a big deal for you? Cause you're aces at it.
Oh, thank you so much. So I think I'm naturally a very dramatic person. Oh,
wow. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm always like, okay, what's the most dramatic way to open? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I usually stick with the first line. Like the first line is usually like the most fun to write, and then it just goes downhill from there.
It does not.
No, stop it.
Your first chapters are really good too. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I feel like first chapters, if I'm in a bookstore or an airport or something and I'm picking up your book, it's going to hook somebody. Yeah,
that is true. Yeah, I really love beginnings and I love endings. I hate the middle.
That's like 99% of the book, though. You can't just.
Yeah.
Are you a like seat of the pants, or are you a plotter?
No, I am like total plotter. And it's so funny because I hear other authors being like, "Oh, I can't plot," you know, because my characters they do whatever they want. And I'm like, no, I am a Chinese mother. My characters do not get to do anything they want.
That's really funny. That's so funny.
That's funny. Jesse, you are dramatic, though. We spent a little time watching your YouTube video that you made for Dial. I believe it's for Dial A for Annie's. You played all the different characters.
Yeah.
I'm a theater teacher. This is my classroom right here. But I am a theater teacher. So I was judging you while I was watching that. And, you passed. It was a wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Really. I'm relieved.
Yeah, I'm sure you're relieved at that. But but in your book, what's fascinating to me is to think about these influencers and how it's not about them. It's about what other people think of them. And even so far, like when they're in public, they got to make sure to be nice to everybody because they can't have somebody taking a video of them not being nice. But it struck me as a very strange way to live, isn't it? Like I would hate to have to be nice, especially that part about being nice. I wouldn't want to have to be nice all the time. So sometimes we just
oh my God, angry, you know? No, totally. Especially after I became a parent, I feel like I just you know, I've become so impatient, right? Because all of my patience is used up by my kids.
Yeah.
Especially when like I'm out with them. So, and then I find myself like being really like snappish towards strangers. Like if they cut in line in front of me, you know, I'm like, excuse me, you know, like zero chill. And then at some point, like, especially after Dial A for Aunties, I started getting recognized here in Jakarta, you know, because like I just don't think like there are that many Indonesian authors, you know, who are published overseas. So, which is really awesome. So people recognize me. And then my husband was like, You can't be an asshole anymore.
That sucks.
I was like, no.
Oh, that's so funny. Now, do you get recognized in like the grocery store and things like that?
Yeah. So that's recognized. So I've gotten recognized like at the mall and at the gym. It's very weird. Yeah. Because then I'm like, oh no, do I have bad form while lifting?
You got to amp that treadmill up a few extra miles per hour.
I know, right?
Yeah, you do.
What's
your writing routine now that you have kids? Has it, like, how do you fit that in?
So it's a lot easier now that they're both in school. But when they were babies, I actually still have the same writing routine, which is, I write for like 2 hours in the morning, and then I'm done. Then I do like the admin stuff, like emails and the rest of that. And I'm actually done working by lunchtime.
Oh.
So my husband, he's so jealous, you know.
I'm jealous.
Like, who has this? Yeah, I know. He's like, who has this life?
Wow.
What is this? And it's a job you love, and you know, like. Yeah, so I really can't complain.
No, and you're a best-selling author. That's amazing. Wow. Yeah, that is that's focus. You must be able to focus really well.
No, I don't. So I came up with this. I came up with this technique, which is I set a 15-minute timer, and then during those 15 minutes, I can only write. Like I don't even like allow myself to take a sip of my coffee or anything, you know? So I just like speed write for 15 minutes. And then after that, I can take a break. And then I come back and do another 15 minutes, you know, until I hit like my word count for the day. And that's like the only way I can write. Cause I don't know about you guys, but like, I just have this really mean voice inside my head that's like, continuously like critiquing me, like, you know, like, oh, this is so crap, you know, it's so boring. So if I don't do it in the 15-minute sprint, like that voice kind of drowns it out. And then I'm like, oh, you're right. I should just give up. You know,
what's up with that voice? I'm 50 years old and I still have the voice. And you'd think like you live a certain length of time, the voice would go away. But better at like talking back to the voice, but the voice is still there. It's incredibly annoying.
When that alarm goes off, like, what is the tone that the alarm goes? Is that like just like that, to me, I would imagine when that 15-minute timer goes off, whatever sound that makes, it's got to be the greatest sound in the world to you, I would think.
My God, it's the best. Yeah, I just use a Google timer. Does this very standard beep.
Yep.
Do a little
That's
dance
really funny. That's really funny. You so you ratchet in the book, you ratchet it up another level when Momfluencer, which
I never heard that word before.
It gets on my nerves a little bit, but Aspen is literally bribing her kids to be on camera and to quote unquote act natural. But imagine that happens all of the time.
I bet.
Because it and then the videos. Do you, as you pointed out in the book, like they're fake, right? But we want that fake perfect life. We don't really want to see someone else's reality is what I'm assuming. Like, I don't know. They're
I cut out there for 10 seconds.
Oh,
could you repeat what you were saying? Sorry.
You were also saying too, like in the book, you point out, we don't want real with these momfluencer videos. We want the fake perfect life. Why do you think that we are craving that? I'm not necessarily craving that, but I could see the appeal for a lot of people.
So for myself, I am drawn to the two extremes. So like either the super aesthetic, perfect, amazing looking thing, or on the other end, you know, they have like mom influencers who kind of like make it their brand to be like a mess.
Yeah.
Where they're like, you know, it's more humorous. Yes. And so like, I find those really interesting too. But then I'm like, well, if it's the middle, then that's just the rest of us. And, you know, and I'm like, eh, what's the fun in watching someone exactly like myself? Like, I'm already living my own life. So, you know,
that's true. That's
neutral. Did you actually ever like take, you know, you watch all these momfluencers. Did you actually ever, I know you're watching it for research, but did you ever stop and say, oh, that's a good idea, I'm going to use that? Or did you like get recipes, or was it all just for research?
No. Oh my God. Their recipes are so crazy. They, they will literally like cook a beef stew in like a whole pumpkin, and I'm like, who's got the time to do that?
Oh wow.
I thought so you made like that up. So that's real. Yeah. I thought you made it up in the book. That's real.
Yeah, no, it's real. Like, yeah, I'm not creative enough to make that up. You know, and I feel like I have really good intentions, you know, because I'm like, I'm gonna bake bread from scratch. And then I do that and it's awesome, and my kids are like, oh, every day, and I'm like, no, I have a life.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll do stuff like that. And the family's like, wow, you should make this all the time. Like, do you realize how long this took me?
Listen, I was looking at those morning routine videos, and one of them, the title was literally, and this is what it was, insanely productive 3 a.m. wake up. I'm like, stop it. Oh. Stop it. Stop it. No one's getting up at 3 a.m. Nobody cares. It was like a 20-minute video. I watched like 19 minutes of it. This is the worst.
Oh,
it's the worst.
God.
It's the absolute worst. But listen.
Okay, that one is pretty hardcore. 3 a.m. is.
Yeah, and of course she wakes up and the makeup is perfect and everything's fine. But listen, we talk, we make a lot of fun. We're having a lot of fun laughing these influencers. And one of the interesting things that I think you did in the book was you talk about, they actually can raise their family on the money they make with this influencing that they're doing. Mm-hmm. So was that something that you wanted to make sure to make a point of doing this instead of just, which I think was really smart. Mm-hmm. It's not just, we're not just having a laugh at these influencers. No, it's a real, profession.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. So, you know, it's like, I feel so many conflicting emotions about like especially the mom influence. Because while, you know, I feel like it's problematic in a lot of ways, but then at the same time, I often see them get belittled for what they're doing.
Right.
And then I'm like, well, hang on, you know, because being an influencer is actually really exhausting, you know, and I've had to do a lot of like social media promotional stuff for my book. It's not even my job. And oh my God, it's so exhausting. Like, how do you come up with, you know, new content ideas every day? And you got to do it every day. Like, it's a serious, you know, job. I mean, I hate it. I don't do it every day.
I loved your last Instagram post. You're just lying flat on your stomach. And
yeah.
Guys, I'm done. I'm out. Help me out. I'm done. I can't do it. It's tough, isn't it?
So like at the same time, I really like respect them for, you know, having that discipline and creativity to like do this day after day. Oh my God. Like, So you know, it's kind of like, yeah, they're problematic, but they're also working hard. And I respect that, even though some of the content is problematic. I don't know. It's a very, it's like a complex mess of feelings that I have about it.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's a little strange. I agree with you too, because mm-hmm. you want to support other women who are mm-hmm. you know, breadwinners and entrepreneurs yeah. and doing all this.
Yeah.
There's some odd like feminist subtext that's in there that maybe isn't helping.
Yeah.
The women at the same
yeah.
time. So you're kind of like, I don't
yeah.
it's odd, right? I don't know.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you like writing this book, have you been like, do you feel more pressure for social media?
No, I mean, it actually felt cathartic, like you know, to write it, because especially after like all of the pressure I feel about like, oh, I should be more, you know, posting more or whatever. So then it feels like a little rush book.
That's good. Yeah. I get, I'm an interior designer and there's a lot of, you know, peer pressure to like post every day and do stuff like that. And it is so much work. Yeah. Sometimes I just get so and I'll be like a week with nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, thank God. Mm-hmm. Break. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this novel is also about friendship, and you dedicated the book to your mm-hmm. best friend. And I'm also reading the one that's set in Oxford too, with mm-hmm. a interesting female relationship. And are you someone with like multiple close friends or like one close mm-hmm. friend kind of person?
Mm-hmm. I used to have fewer friends, and then after I became a mom, oh my God, it's like the easiest thing to make mom friends, right? Like
that
mom friends
true.
Are just the freaking best. They're like the most supportive group of friends I've ever come across. You know, like, and we just understand one another on like such an amazing level, because all of us, you know, we love our kids, but oh my God, they drive us crazy too.
Yes.
Yeah. So I would say like now I have a really good, you know, group of really amazing mom friends that, yeah.
And you went to Oxford University, I think,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of curious, in your dorm room, did you have the fireplace?
No. So, I had the fireplace. I did a summer abroad in Cambridge, when I was in college, and then my room in Cambridge had a fireplace, and I was like, oh, that's amazing.
That is
amazing.
Oh
my God. That was why I was like, I'm going to apply to, Oxford, you know, or Cambridge.
Yeah.
But Cambridge just didn't have the creative writing program. So I applied to Oxford, but then I didn't get a fireplace. So sad.
I don't think
beautiful town. Oxford's such a pretty town.
Yeah. I don't think college kids should have fireplaces. That just doesn't seem the two
That's
don't
true.
Really mesh, you know.
Mm-hmm. I feel like they might. Yeah. I know. We're dropping our daughter off at college for the first time on Sunday. So you know, that's
We're
it's
right
fresh
now.
On my mind. I'm like, well, she's definitely not getting a fireplace.
Yeah. No, I went to Berkeley for college, and I was supposed to stay in the dorm, and my parents took me, and then they turned right around. They were like, no, you are not staying here. There are boys in this dorm.
Oh, Berkeley is really loose, fast and loose with the... Yeah. What did you do? Did you still go to Berkeley, or did they get you an apartment on campus?
They rented an apartment.
Yeah.
And it was like a mile away from campus. So I was like so far away from everyone, but they're like, you know, no boys allowed.
What's your undergraduate degree in?
English Lit.
English Lit. Did you want to teach or was the goal always to be a writer?
I think I didn't know what I wanted to do. And after I graduated, I was like, I like to do two things. So one is writing and the other one is cooking. And so I thought, I'll go to culinary school. But then my cousin was like, no, I'm going to culinary school. You go do whatever. And so I was like, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
No, really?
I'm like, why couldn't both of us go? But at the time, I was like, yeah, no, totally. Like, you got that. Like, I'll go do this other thing.
Oh, man, I'm glad you didn't go to culinary school. Because
yeah, I'm glad to.
Yeah, that's a hard life, too.
That's hard.
You that is so hard. To do a two-hour-a-day work session.
No.
You're like Charles Barkley with his famous work routine, I think.
Yeah. There's no taking a break after 15 minutes when you're in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's true. You can't do that. That's true.
Now, Josie, I see in your bio, you are a gamer as well, which makes sense given all the free time you have in your afternoons to do stuff. So what games do you like to play? What do you play? What are we talking about?
So the last one I played was Overwatch.
Oh,
and then I actually had to quit because I was like being very mean and probably bullying like 8-year-old kids online. I don't know.
You get on that? Why you can't do that? Come on. You turn the headset on and you engage? Oh, Jesse.
I know.
Oh, I love that. Like, that's the best.
You know, people like get road rage. I get like gamer rage. So I had to quit. And then I was like, I'm just going to play Stardew Valley or something calming. Okay. Yeah. And then, you know, I'll be like, no, now I want some like PvP. Yeah. So it's a vicious cycle that I am working on with my therapist.
That's really funny. I feel like that's a good outlet for you, though.
I think
it's safe. Mm-hmm. You know, well, it's safe, know. Although it might turn you into
ish.
There are young kids out there with a complex because of Jesse. Come on, I don't know how safe
I know.
mommy, I'm getting yelled at.
I get so petty. Like if someone annoys me in the game,
right? Yeah,
I will choose like to play a healer, and then I will go around killing people as a healer, and then I'm like, haha, you just got killed by a healer.
Oh, that is mean. Yeah, that's mean.
Oh, that's awesome.
Funny. Yeah. I like that. That's really funny.
That's great. That's fantastic. I love that. All right, Jesse, it's time now for our segment we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions in which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
We're currently watching Love is Blind UK. Oh my God, so good. So
bingeable. Is that good?
Oh, yeah. I heard about that show. You're enjoying that one? Okay.
That's awesome.
The UK the UK does the reality shows the best.
They do.
Oh, it's really, well, all of them have been good. I am a Love is Blind junkie. I try to mention it in as many books as I can because, like, it was so fun because I actually mentioned it in a book of mine, and then that someone posted about it on, like, the actual Love is Blind, like, Reddit. And I was like, oh, my God, I made it.
That's awesome. That's when you've made it. Yeah, forget about getting recognized. When you get it on Reddit, and you get in the Love is Blind, that's when you
that's
know
so
made it.
We like Love Island.
Yeah, we're big Love Island fans.
I like Love Island.
Kind of drags on a little bit, but the front
part. It does. Yeah, they stay on that island for a very long time.
A little too long.
I think
shorten it, cut it a little bit, tighten it up. So what fictional world or place would you like to visit?
I want to say Azeroth. Oh my God, this is such a geeky answer. It's the world in World of Warcraft.
I love it. Yeah, that's great.
She is a true gamer.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, she is.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's the first. That's the first for an author. Mm-hmm. I like that.
You could be a real healer and
and refuse to heal someone.
I'm
an asshole.
Yeah. And then cackle.
And kill him and laugh and run away. Scurry away. How about this? Jesse, give us one of your favorite movies of all time. How about one of your favorite movies?
Interstellar.
Oh, that's so good. McConaughey. That is really good.
How about a favorite book of yours?
Oh, that's so hard. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Or one that's on your mind recently.
Okay, so one that's been on my mind recently is The Husbands by, I think it's by Holly Gramazio. I'm probably butchering her last name. But the premise is this woman's attic just suddenly starts producing husbands. So she comes home and she finds this stranger and he's like, I'm your husband. And then she looks at their photos, like they have actually been married. And then, but then she sends him back up to the attic. And then a different husband comes down. So she kind of goes through this, like, until she finds one that she likes or whatever. And I'm like, oh my God, I want this attic.
I got to check that book out. That gave me a chill.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really fun.
How about this, Jesse? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
It will be like, something very dramatic and emo, like I'm Not Okay by My Chemical Romance.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Oh, man, you're the best.
That's fantastic. That's a great
answer. Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
I'm currently reading The Unwedding by Allie something.
Okay, yeah. I did see, I've seen that out there and I don't remember. Yeah, I can look it up really quick. The Unwedding.
You ever get mad like when
Ali
Jesse
Condi?
When,
Ali Condi, yeah.
Ali Condi, yeah.
Jesse, when you're reading a book, I feel like you're the type of person when you're like, "Oh, that's a great idea," and then you just get angry and you're angry that it wasn't your idea, and then you can't steal it.
I was so angry about the husbands, you know. I was like, "Oh, an attic that produces husbands. Why didn't I think of that? That is so annoying." You were gonna ask you, like, do you get angry? And I was just gonna be like, "Yes."
Yes.
Yeah, every day, every minute of every day. Well, Jesse, I hope you're not angry at us. We had a delightful time chatting with you. Absolutely loved your book. You Will Never Be Me. And
I love your books.
Thank you.
Going to read more. So thanks so much for hopping on.
Yeah.
Have thank a good you. This was so fun. Okay. Thank you. You okay. too.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
The Inside Flap. All right, there you go. Thank you so much to Jesse Q. Sutanto. Check out that book. You Will Never Be Me. All right, let's go ahead and open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Don't you know Liddell wears a suit and tie? So I'm driving down the
street. Laura, what do you got for us this week?
I have a book called Burn by Peter Heller. So this is brand new. It came out last week. I am a Peter Heller fan.
We love Peter Heller.
He lives in Denver. Yeah.
We tried to get him on the show.
We did. I did get this as
a little bit of a recluse.
What do you call
advanced
reader copy.
They sent us the book. Yep.
Did try to get him on the show. I wouldn't know if he's a recluse. He just doesn't give, doesn't give interviews. But if you haven't read anything by him yet, I probably wouldn't start with this one. Mm-hmm. But wow, this is an interesting story.
Yeah, I can't wait to read it.
It's loaded with nostalgia, sadness, and introspection, which, for whatever reason, that's my jam. If that's not your jam, you won't like this book.
Okay.
If that is your jam, I love to roll around in melancholy. Mm. You can roll around in melancholy in this book. Mm-hmm. So the setup is absolutely fantastic. Two friends, middle-aged men named Jess and Story, emerge from the deep Maine wilderness. They've been remote camping and hunting for a few weeks. They have been completely off the grid. There's no cell service. When they get out, they get to their car. They try to drive out. They find the bridge that they came in on is out. Story looks at it and he says, because I guess he's been maybe been in the military or whatever. He says, you know, this bridge has been blown up.
Oh.
Maybe they think it was scheduled to be demolished. They drive a little further down looking for another bridge. They remember that bridge is also out. With no cell service, they park, they lock the car, they start hiking out. What else are you going to do?
Sure. Yeah.
They have a map. They hike to the nearest town. And let me tell you, this town is gone. It's been burned to a crisp. There is no one left living.
Wow.
Huh.
The dogs, the cats have been burned. No cars are left. The cars have been burned. Weird thing that has been left in this town and in some of the other main coastal towns that they come to are the boats. The boats haven't been touched, which I found a little interesting.
Well, people love to get, you know, especially for the 4th of July, if you're not out on a boat celebrating.
Oh, I mean, this is Maine. It's a watery area. Yeah. So this starts the journey for these two men with no cell service. They don't know what's going on across a portion of Maine, and they're trying to understand what's happened. So story, one of the men has a wife and kids in Vermont. He's incredibly worried about them because this is Maine. Vermont's close. Whatever's happened here in Maine, he doesn't know. Maybe it's happening in Vermont as well. Right. Their guess is that Maine has tried to secede from the Union in this world that Peter Heller has built. Before they went into the forest, the United States was having trouble with secessionists up in this part of the country. But they're also not sure who's doing what. They do see some Black Hawk helicopters that are unmarked. It's hard to tell who's doing what. One of the more moving parts of this book is the men do come across a survivor, a 5-year-old girl who's on a boat. They do take a boat at one point to try to get out and get away. And she is in the hold. And she really got me. So I don't want to give anything more away. It's a very moving book. It's told through the eyes of Jess as they're moving through this apocalyptic landscape. Jess dwells on the past quite a bit. His and Story's friendship, his own family and past. And then they also have this 5-year-old girl that they're suddenly caring for. They're trying to survive along with her, find food in a world that's been burned. So this is a short book, and it's beautifully written. I recommend it. It's called Burn by Peter Heller.
All right. Yeah, Peter Heller, he does write shorter missives, which is nice. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can get in. He's a great writer. You can get out.
Yeah.
Okay, so my book this week. Dave Medicus. When we usher in chaos, just know that we did a smile. Cannibals on this island. Is a gothic horror thriller set in a remote small town in Italy. It is called Diavola by Jennifer Marie Thorne. Such a good book. A gothic thriller. It starts out with an American extended family on vacation together. In a house, Andrew, much in like not unlike the house that you rented for your extended family. This is a house for this extended family. And, of course, there are plenty of squabbles that arise when family get together. And what I really liked about this is how long, like for a while, you wouldn't even know this is a horror book. The author lets these scenes develop. The relationships are clearly delineated. And we really get to know this family. In particular, our main character, Anna. Now, we also meet Anna's mom. She's, you know, Anna's kind of the outcast of the family. She's always disappointed the family. And the mom, you know, is not afraid to let Anna know how disappointed she is in her. There's Anna's sister. Anna's sister has mapped out every second of the vacation in this super type schedule. She's a very type A personality. We got Anna's her sister's two daughters there. And there's also Anna's twin brother, Benny. Benny has brought his uptight boyfriend along, who is extremely obnoxious and constantly judging, let's just say, the atmosphere.
I'm going to pass on that vacation.
It's pretty thick with this family. And yeah. It's also what's great. It's the typical culture clash, this big American fan. Anna speaks Italian fairly well. So she works as the translator when they go out to dinner and stuff like this. But it's the big culture clash. It's a big American family in this resort Italian town. Add to that, suddenly there is an environment that is a little strange and a little spooky, and all seems to emanate from this locked tower located on the estate where they're staying. Yes, and everyone in the town, they seem to have an opinion about this tower, but they don't really want to tell Anna or her family about the story and the secrets behind this tower. Slowly, the creep factor settles over the family, and the twists start flying fast and furious. And now, I'm not going to give away. The whole second half of the book is insane. I don't want to give anything away, so I won't.
Sounds great.
But I love this book. There's lots of humor in it at the beginning, and you think you're just reading a book about a dysfunctional family until the horror slowly takes over, and it's just downright creepy. Creepy at the end, I tell you. Really enjoyed this one. Diavola by Jennifer Marie Thorne. All right, Andrew.
So my book this week is called Cascade Failure. It is the debut novel by L.M. Saga.
Right? Oh, and, a debut novelist.
Yeah, and so I don't know if that's...
It's got to be.
I don't know if that's his real name or not, but it's L.M. Saga. And, you know, one of the things I love about debut novels is they're a little bit raw.
I like a debut, too.
You know, and just
I like a first also in a series.
And that's
similar
what this
things,
is.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And this series is the Ambit's book one.
you want to give that one another shot? The Ambits?
Well, it's called Ambit Book One. And okay. So Ambit is the name of a spaceship.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And so... So this is a, you know, I would say it is a space opera for certain. And the book concerns a very dysfunctional, politically corrupt, universe where you have the trust that represents like the corporate interests. You have the labor union. And then to complete the triumvirate or whatever you want to call it, is the guild who basically tries to like mitigate things between the trust and the union.
Mm.
Now, you know, so Jal is the main character in this book. And Jal has been branded a deserter. Right.
And oh, you never want to be, you will never want to have that on your.
Yeah. And now as you read about Jal, you don't actually know what the truth is. Right. And it's kind of cool, too, that you don't know. I mean, you honestly don't know what happened. Now, you in learning about Jal, you get the idea that he is not the type of person that would desert, right? And so you kind of build an opinion of Jal without really knowing what the facts are.
Okay.
And then later in the book, you find out what the facts really are, which I'm going to tell you right now. I'm not going to talk about that. Yeah. So you'll have to read the book, but you're probably more than three quarters of the way through the book before you figure that out. But you have enough of an idea who the character of Jal, that you don't actually believe that he would have deserted. And then you find some things too, like the group of people that he was in the military with. They kind of turned their back and abandoned him, and then bad stuff happened to Jal. Now there's a comment in Jal's military record that basically says Jal is either going to save your life or he will be the cause of your death.
Whoa.
Right? Jal finds trouble, right? And I think there's one quote in this book that basically says for some people, they have trouble or something is in their, I don't know, in their skin or something like that. But it's like, for Jal, trouble is in his bones.
I think the quote was, trouble with a capital T that rhymes with P, and that stands for...
I know it's a Music Man quote, but yeah.
Pool.
Oh, pool. Okay.
Yeah. Pool? Yeah, come pool? On.
Pool. Yeah.
That might have been pool? Your line.
Yeah. Yeah, like billiards. Yeah, yeah, that was my line.
Oh,
yeah.
Pool.
Pool. Because, that's where
the Baltimore in there was hey. Confusing me. Hey, so dear one.
Pool. Pool. You won't go down to pool.
So Jal's been on the run for several years, right? And again, you really don't know what's happened to him. You just know that he's running through this port. And by port, it's all spaceships around, and he's looking to get on a spaceship. And so he's basically trying to find somebody that will hire him, no questions asked, simply to have an extra hand, on the ship. And he thinks he finds the perfect ship, and it turns out to be the Ambit, A-M-B-I-T. And so he basically ends up, calling up the gangplank, hello, hello, and then the gangplank shuts and, locks him on the ship.
Oh, fun.
Right?
That's fun.
So he's like, well, I've got no choice but to keep trying to find somebody. So it turns out it's actually the people he's trying to run away from.
Oh, it's their ship?
It's their ship. Now,
whoops.
These people he's trying to run away from are actually his friends. They used to be his friends.
Okay.
But they're probably some of the people that would care for him more than anybody else. Now, what is their response to him getting trapped on their spaceship? They shoot him in the back.
Oh.
Right?
Oh,
and that's his friends. And, and there's a line in the book. It's like, well, if my friends literally shoot me in the back, how is anybody else going to treat me? Right? Because they know enough about me to maybe question what I've been charged with. And he doesn't fight opinion. Right? He doesn't waste the time or the energy trying to fight people or trying to tell them, hey, you don't really know what's going on, right? Like, because most people are like, would be explaining, oh, this is what's going on or this is what's going on. But it kind of turns out like Zhao knows he's not a deserter, but he doesn't really understand the situation that he's in, right? And that starts to, you know, that's part of the book is discovering like what really is going on. Now, of course, as the Ambit is taking Zhao. Yeah,
and bottom line, they say Ambit.
Yeah.
Ambit Hun.
So as they're taking, as the Ambit, the crew of the Ambit.
I bet they'd have trouble saying that word, actually.
They would. They would say, because they can't even say ambulance. They say ambulance.
Yeah. That's true.
So ambulance.
Enough Baltimore. So
it's hard to stop.
Yeah. It is really hard to stop.
So
we're going to get through
this. So they're taking Zhao in.
Will we?
To basically turn him in as a deserter. But on the way there, they get a distress call.
Mm.
Now, is it just a simple distress call and nothing happens and they end up taking Zhao? Or does this distress call basically completely change the story and the plot of the entire book?
I'm
guessing the latter.
The latter, dear honey.
You know it. And so basically, there ends up being another major issue where thousands of people are being killed and planets are being destroyed.
Hmm.
And that's what ends up coming out of this distress call. And this may or may not be related to the trouble that Zhao has basically found himself in. So, you know, this is it is not a hard sci-fi book. It is a true space opera. I would not say it is not a fast read. It is not the easiest book to read. But it is, you know, it is a well-written, interesting book. And definitely a great debut novel. It'll be interesting to read the second book in the series, just to see, like, after writing his first book, you know, where does LM go with the second book in the series? But the book is called Cascade Failure, written by LM Saga.
Hmm.
All right, and that brings us all the way up to our
audiobook of the week.
And in my ongoing quest to be a Don Winslow completist, I bring you another Don Winslow audiobook, California Fire and Life, narrated by John Lindstrom. Another great Don Winslow book. Here is a guy in Don Winslow who spent years as a private investigator. And when he was working as a PI, he did a lot of work investigating insurance fraud, including arson cases. And that knowledge is on full display in this crime thriller. A rollicking good time, an entertaining thriller that, like all his books, is also, I don't know how he does it, so funny, as well as dark. So our hero is an insurance claims adjuster and a surfer, like Winslow, named Jack Wade. Jack Wade, great name, Jack Wade, who ended up working for this insurance company called California Fire and Life after he lost his job on the police force when he completely botched a case by planting evidence and... He kind of beat up a suspect because he just knew the guy did it. Because he's, you know, our guy Jack Wade is very much, you know, he believes in the truth. But, you know, he can play a little fast and loose with the rules. He couldn't prove it. He ended up losing his job. Now he's an insurance claims adjuster. And it is now years later, and he's called to the scene of a fire. And he... By God, he's sure the guy said it and burned his wife down in it on purpose. But once again, he can't prove it. So what is an investigator to do? Just another great entry in the series of books. And this is a standalone, but he has a lot of books set in this, what I call SoCal surfer noir. And I'm not the first person to call it that. There are plenty of bad guys, an earnest and righteous investigator out for the truth, and lots of people that are in his way telling him to just leave it alone. So let's take a listen to a clip. This is California Fire and Life by Don Winslow, narrated by John Lindstrom.
Middle of freaking nowhere, says Tommy's buddy Vince Tran. Tommy doesn't give a shit. He's happy to be getting rid of the load. A truck full of hot stuff. Tommy pulls over by a caddy. They love their caddies, Tran says to him in Vietnamese. Let 'em, Tommy says. Tommy's saving for a Miata. A Miata is cool. Tommy can see himself cruising in a black Miata, wraparound shades on his face, a babe with long black hair beside him. Yeah, he can see that.
Audiobook of the week.
Alrighty, there you go. That's your show for this week. Thank you so much to our guest, Jesse Q. Sutanto. Check out that book. You will not be disappointed. And it's called You Will Never Be Me. All right, that'll do it for us this week. My name is Dave Medicus. See ya.
Adios.
Excelsior.
Ah, you just got killed by your healer.